Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
My daughter Catherine is like impervious to change. She wants nothing to change. She hates change. Joining me is the man who's having some issues this morning, Alex Hollings. And so we delayed his joining us so we could like not destroy his cell phone. So a tree falls on the power line near your home this morning, and living in the sticks, you got nothing.
Yeah, I got nothing. I couldn't even get my family out of here because the tree was down across the road. So but we've got people here on site now. They're cutting through the tree as I speak. So you might hear some chainsaw noises in the background. But on the bright side, I'll be able to get out of here after. So I'll take the inconvenience.
All right, let's talk. let's pull this incident apart. So do you have a pickup truck, and do you have some kind of strap or chain to pull people out of the pickup truck or to pull
out? I have a crappy, weak Honda CRV.
CRV? Like sedan?
How good that would be.
That's a sedan. Okay, so that's a problem. Now, you don't have a strap to pull people out of a ditch or anything like that?
Oh, of course I've got a strap. I've probably got 6 toe straps in here. Again, you know, this is really where I shoot myself in the foot by relying on my brother because he owns the garage.
Okay, shut up, Brian. So I'm not done interrogating you yet. So, was the tree such that you couldn't hook a strap around it and drag it out of the way?
The tree was big enough that I really don't think my CRV could have done. Okay. I think I might have been able to budget, you know, but it needs to be cut up. So the chainsaw was definitely the strategy. If I didn't get somebody out here to take care of it from the electric company. But now that they're here on site, I've got it.
Okay, and now, you don't know this, but I have incredible electrical experience. I used to, every week, one of my big sponsors when I used to do over-the-air radio was Bergstrom Electric in Grand Forks, North Dakota. My boy Steve Wozniak would come on, and we would talk electricity. And up in North Dakota, where it's colder than shit, you have to generate a backup if you're on rural power. That's a big deal when something goes wrong, and you can have that generator wired straight into the wiring of your home. You can have it kick off automatically like it does in commercial buildings. So give us the status of your generator. Did it go on and wake you up? Is that how you found out that the tree fell? Talk to me.
Well, you know, not all of us are walking around with those fat radio pockets, you know, to just go scoop up generators for our rentals left and right, you know. So unfortunately for me, my generator's still at the store pending payment.
You are, what do you mean? You are the king of all media. You're just like just this side of Howard Stern. You are a senior writer at NewsRap. You are a... what's your official title at Popular Mechanics?
Well, freelance writer. You know, I'm a columnist.
Okay, so you're a columnist for them, and now you're what? You're an editor of what?
I am now the editor of Fightersweep.com. I'm actually super excited to start shouting that at people. I'm an editor now, you know, which makes me feel like I have all kinds of power that I don't actually have because I've yet to hire a staff.
Okay, so bro, with all that money, all right, buy yourself a generator.
Well, when you say all that money, you have to bear in mind that the amount of money that you make to write things for the internet is not necessarily the same as, say, writing for a Hollywood movie, right? The amount of money that I make is enough money for me to live quite comfortably. I tell my wife that I want to go spend $400 on the generator, which is a conversation we've had, because I'm a crazy person. You know, I've got MRAs in my basement.
Yeah, that's not fair. Did she think it was crazy today when you said, you know what, we should probably get a generator?
Absolutely, you know, and this is the
conversation. She thought it was crazy today?
That we have.
She thought it was crazy today?
Because according to her, we live in the 21st century and in the United States, and there's infrastructure here to support us. That's literally her argument. And don't get me wrong, this is the thing. That's not an uncommon argument within the U.S. people just usually don't put it together that way. You know, here in the U.S.,
we
have a normalcy bias.
It depends. You know, it depends where you live. I would tell you that, you guys are both from up north where you do have snow and there it sometimes it's days before people can get to you. I would think that
she and I come from different versions of up north. I come from, the rural upstate New York. She comes from a pretty well-established family in Connecticut. You know, so I don't think that she's ever experienced having the power go out and waiting a day or two. You know, at least not until she was with me. I don't think that she's ever really had to live in a world where someone wasn't coming, you know, which is a very common thing for the United States. It's not the world that I grew up in, but it is the one that she did.
No, they're
coming.
We have
a different basis of reference.
Yeah, they're coming. They just might not get there for a day or two.
Exactly. You know, this is what I try to tell people a lot of times when it comes to things like putting water, you know, having some water storage in your basement or having some food there.
Yeah.
It's not that you're preparing for the end of the world. It's that you're preparing for that time where it takes 6 days for things to get better. You know, when we hit last year out here in Georgia, you know, people don't think about the fact that your cell phone towers go out when they don't have power to them either. So after the hurricane, we had no power. We had no water. We didn't even have cell phones to communicate with each other. And people started to panic. You don't need the world to end permanently for it to be a tough situation. You just need people to be worried enough to start doing silly things.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, my goal is to not prepare for the apocalypse because, Lord knows, you know, my crappy little house in the woods is not a very defensible position. My plan is to be prepared, however, for, you know, days like this where maybe I'm not going to have power for 2 days, so I've got solar chargers for my phones, and we've got water, you know, and we've got enough water that we can get the toilets to flush. Couple of days. Absolutely, I think everyone should be prepared for a couple of days. Now, should I have a generator? Yeah, man. I really ought to. I don't have an argument there.
I don't think. Now, this is just my opinion, but my life experience, and again, North Dakota, living in northern North Dakota, where the temperatures do get pretty
cold. Electricity is a life or death thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But I'll even tell you this: even during the summer, we had an event where we had straight line winds in excess of 100 miles an hour, which toppled 700 trees in the city. And the people who had generators could go on living. If you didn't have a generator, because it was a disaster for the city, and the electricity was not coming on anytime soon. There were so many trees down, and so you were stuck, and you had to leave, and then everybody had to leave, and all the rest of that. So I would say for a variety of reasons, if you live a little bit rural, having a generator, and you don't need a big one, but, you know, to power your, pick the appliances, to power your refrigerator, power what? I don't know, even your stove. You can find a different way to cook stuff.
Refrigeration, I would argue, is probably one of the bigger ones, you know? I mean, refrigeration is the secret to long-lasting life, you know?
No joke, it is.
Yeah, you know, so, like, if you can keep the food that's in your refrigerator from spoiling, you might not eat the things that you wanted to eat, you know, if things get kind of rough for a couple of days, but you've got plenty to eat. You know, and that's what really matters.
Right, and the water normally continues to run no matter what. So you got that going. So you got water and
now,
you have food.
Unless you're in my position where you got a well, we've got a manual pump for when the electric pump goes out, so I can go out and pump water.
Right,
but you could hook
that little pump to the generator, and when that thing fires
up,
water runs. So I think it's a solid purchase, man.
You know, I think, and what I need, because I'm a renter, so what I need to do is get one, you know, get one of those cool ones on wheels that I can throw in the back of the truck.
Right.
You know what I mean? And take
right.
my next with me. I really do need one.
Right.
No argument here.
Right. No, and like I said, you should probably, I would say, I mean, call the homeowner, call the guy who owns the home and say, hey, man, how about you and I split some of this stuff? And here's what I'd like to do. So, hey, let me ask you a question. What's your take on the use of the word hanging tree in politics?
So this falls into a category that I have a lot of strong opinions about how apt we are to tear one another's apart over turns of phrase.
Right.
I think intent matters more than language.
Okay.
You know, at its most base level, what is language? You know, what are we doing when we're talking to each other? We're trying to convey a thought from my head into your head, right? I'm thinking something. I'm going to move my mouth and make some weird sounds at you so that you can have that thought inside your head. And this is the reason why I have a problem with people using the phrase N-bomb, for instance. The idea is to put that word that you don't want to say into my head. The intent should be the concern. Now, if you're using the N-bomb, the N-word, to hurt someone or in a hateful way, obviously, then that's bad. Then you're wrong. If you're using it in an academic way, if you're using it in a cultural discussion, you're just hiding from the word because you think the sound your mouth makes has power. It's not the sound your mouth makes that matters.
What about if you're hanging out? What if you're hanging out with black Marines and they're just using it because they've always used it?
Again, though, we're talking about the situation and the intention.
Okay.
No, you're not going to get away with dropping N-bombs. It's not acceptable. It's not socially acceptable. I don't encourage it, and I'm not saying it's okay to drop N-bombs willy-nilly. But what I am saying is that we have a tendency to blame people for their word choices instead of what they meant.
Okay, now, all right. Now, you know what? In the world, I got that. But we're talking about politics here.
Where word choices matter even more. There's no disputing that. There's no disputing that. But again, I really think that we need to come away from this idea that if a politician is on national TV and he makes a gaffe or she makes a gaffe, he says something that's wrong, especially in the era of Donald Trump. When Donald Trump goes up and says something, and it's wrong, as it tends to be, you know, we always immediately jump to this. Either it was an intentional lie, or Donald Trump doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well,
right?
But here's the interesting thing about him. He just continues to burn it down and go through it and never looks back. And it works.
Honestly, it's the Russian approach. It works. If you just flood the market with bullshit, people stop worrying about your bullshit.
You're generating more than they can dissect, throw at everybody with detailed analysis. You're four more bullshit statements down the road, and they're staggering.
There's a little bit of insider baseball in the journalism world that people might not be privy to. So the White House, especially the White House press corps, are very familiar with a tendency to release like a shotgun blast of stories all at once. Especially when it's like, let's say they've got three different stories that they know for a fact are going to result in some bad press. They make sure that the White House press secretary doesn't release these stories until you release them all at once. You know, you sit on it for a day or two. Release them all at once because you know as well as I do that the next day on the front page of the Washington Post, there's only going to be one headline in big bold letters. You know, we know very well that tomorrow the trending topics of the stories on CNN and Fox News are only going to be a couple of stories. You know, today it's Ukraine, right? Because of that, they leverage the fact that our attention spans are so short, and they'll just throw out six or seven really bad stories on one Friday afternoon because they know people aren't watching the news much over the weekend, and you can only get one or two headlines out of this news cycle. So we just don't notice. Donald Trump didn't invent this approach. This is an approach that's been used probably forever, as long as there's been a free press in the United States. But Donald Trump has weaponized this way of, I'm just going to throw so much bullshit at you at once that there's really no way you can poke holes in it because it's full of holes. So you just look petty by trying to go through a nitpick. You know, and you can't fault the guy for a winning strategy. It is successful in a lot of places. You know, it's working in a number of situations. And sometimes I'm not even sure it's intentional, but it is definitely effective. It's literally the Russian foreign policy. So,
well, we haven't had John since the election. What did you make of the election?
I'm sorry, my phone cut out on you.
What did you make of the election?
This recent midterm election?
Yes.
I think that this was a perfect example of messaging mattering more than content. Just like we're talking about word choicing, we tend to lean on the word choices rather than the intent behind it. When you see things like deploying troops to the southern border, in my opinion, that was very midterm election related, much more so than it was pertaining to a caravan that everyone's concerned about. I think that Donald Trump was well aware of the fact that a lot of his political clout was on the line here in this midterm election. And again, this isn't a criticism of Donald Trump. This is the game. You know, this is the game that we play. He was well aware of the fact that there's a large contingent of Americans that were going out to spite vote. They weren't voting for a candidate. They were voting against his party. And because of that, he had to, you know, come in swinging as well.
Right.
Politics in America right now are it's dirty baseball. You know, people are dirty boxing. You know, it's ugly out there. Georgia being a great example where, you know, the governor race was highly contested here in my state. In all honesty, it was between a guy who's more conservative than a lot of middle-leaning conservatives like, and a woman who was more liberal than a lot of middle-leaning liberals like. It was a contest between two pseudo-extremes because of how dirty things are getting. We're voting by parties, not by candidates anymore. However, I think that what we saw was classic Washington, D.C. strategery. The difference is, in my opinion, is the Trump administration is a little bit more ham-fisted, so it was a little more conspicuous this time. But I don't think we saw anything in this midterm election that we haven't seen in just about every contested midterm election in my lifetime, at least.
Got it. Email. Well, I'm still getting used to an admin weaning writing about aviation. I was following fightersweep.com long before Alex's arrival, and he has definitely improved the site! Motivating! The CRV is a compact SUV, and then in parentheses, grocery getter, not a sedan. Thank you very much. So you're already getting compliments about your...
That means the world to me. That's awesome. Thank you very much.
Your editorial capabilities. Congratulations.
I appreciate it. You know, Fire Sweep was a winning lottery ticket for me, you know, because a lot of times somebody that owns a number of web pages, if they're looking to expand, you know, and you're like, hey, guys, I could do this. I want the ball. They'll give you a site with, like, a small social media footprint, you know, a small readership, and see what you can do. Fighter Sweep's got 90,000 fans on Facebook with me walking in, you know. It's a huge opportunity for me to reach a big audience and have editorial control of the content. And it means the world to me that people are responding well to it, because it really is. It's a project of passion for me now, because it's a chance for me to kind of, you know, make my own way. I'm steering the ship. As opposed to at NewsRep, which I do love being the senior staff writer, but that ultimately makes you like the senior enlisted advisor, right? The managing editor ultimately makes the decisions. He just asks me, hey, like, is this something we can do? And I go, well, I think so. Or, no, I don't think so. Over at Fighter Sleep, I get to be the guy that decides. And that's really what I wanted. I wanted to be able to take the helm, you know? So I'm excited. And thank you so much for reading. Please, everyone go to fightersweep.com. Like it on Facebook. Just, you know, click on every story you see with my name on it.
Fighter, F-I-G-H-T-E-R, sweep.com. So,
Fighter Sweep, yep, S-W-E-E-P. You got it.
So take a look. Our one and only. Two-thirds of the earth is covered by water. Alex Hollings, covering everything else in every other social media platform you may look at. Your thoughts on what happened in the Ukraine?
Oh man, this is hairy. You know, I mean, a lot of people don't realize how tensions really kicked off between Russia and Ukraine in the last couple of years. Ukraine was leaning heavily towards becoming a NATO nation for a little while, which would have put NATO right on Russia's borders. And that really made Russia nervous. So Russia started pushing influence into Ukraine really hard and heavy. Lots of money, lots of overt pressure, you know, threat pressure. And as they did that, they really did start to sway the Ukrainian government toward Russia. And a couple of years, I think it was, 2013, the Ukrainian government voted to lean towards Russia as opposed to NATO. And when the Ukrainian people, who felt as though this wasn't in their best interest, rose up and started protesting, Russia took that opportunity to seize Crimea in 2014 and start backing these separatists further up north in the eastern portion of the country. So what we're looking at here is really Russia trying to make sure Ukraine stays, for the most part, destabilized enough that it can't become a NATO ally, it can't become a member of NATO, it can't put NATO on their doorstep, Putin's doorstep.
Right.
What we're looking at right now is a good, they've been staring at each other across this waterway, you know? Russia is trying to flex its muscle to make sure it knows that, make sure we know they're serious. However, they also know full well that if they push too hard, NATO is going to come in to support Ukraine. Thus far, NATO has offered verbal support, right? Russia cannot sustain a war with a formidable force such as the United States or, God help them, NATO. They couldn't afford it. They don't want World War III. They want Ukraine to take them seriously. Tensions are going to be very high here for months, for years to come. I really don't think we're going to see World War III. I think we're going to see a gradual reduction in tensions in that area because no one wants war. But I tell you what, here in the meantime, things are going to be scary. You know, there's definitely going to be more people hurt, I think, before this comes to a head.
But it is, you're right. It is quintessentially the Russian style, which is we're gonna send a message. There's going to be a level of violence involved in it. We're going to flex our limited military muscle, and then we're going to let it, you know, all go back to normal. But you're going to,
have given them a better opportunity. That, you know, the cards were really stacked in their favor. You know, in this strait, it's a very narrow waterway. They were able to put a cargo ship under a bridge and effectively block the entire waterway.
It's awesome.
You know, it was
the Russians are the
equivalent of Thermopylae.
They are the kings of ghetto. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, what?
You want to bang for their buck. You know,
what?
They're bargain hunters when it comes to geopolitics. They really are.
They do. So, they are not afraid to go ghetto. When you see that picture of that tanker under the bridge, you're like, they did what? That's awesome.
Like, that's like something you do in Grand Theft Auto.
Exactly. You know? Like in a video game, not in the real world. Nobody would ever do that.
And they've got Su-25s swooping in low. Su-25s, by the way, which are kind of Russia's equivalent of an A-10, you know. We're talking about close air support aircraft swooping in low. They're not the aircraft you would use for a naval blockade. You know, a Su-30 with anti-ship missiles, maybe. But they're literally, they're putting on a show for the world. You know, they send in KA-52 attack choppers. They send a bunch of different naval assets in. They were showing off. They were putting on a display. I mean, not that different than, you know, us launching 35 F-35s in the span of just a few minutes, just to show the world we could. It's not that different. Honestly, these are, you know, I call them retaliatory strikes, you know, like punitive strikes, punitive military action. Russia's doing it now. We did it in Syria twice since Donald Trump was elected. This is the shift that we're going to see because our world systems that are devised to prevent a world war are still sound. I mean, they're not necessarily as strong as they once were. We're still a long way away from World War III, barring some really crazy kind of space situation. However, we're going to see more and more of these punitive strikes. We launched a bunch of Tomahawks at Syria, where, you know, Russia's going to blockade a strait. These punitive actions are going to become kind of everybody's MO because we don't want to go to war with one another, but we want to show how strong we can be. So we're going to go back into an era of proxy wars like you've seen in Syria, and we're going to see increasingly, I think we'll start seeing China playing this game soon because they're desperate for operational experience. We're going to start seeing punitive strikes, retaliatory strikes, isolated military incidents like this one with Ukraine yesterday. You know, the waterway's already open. Russia already made the point. That the point all along was just for the world to see them do it. You know, not that different than us launching a bunch of Tomahawks at Syria that really didn't take out any actual infrastructure, didn't really hurt Bashar al-Assad in any real way, but the whole world saw us raining missiles on Syria. That was the intent. Just like this situation yesterday with Ukraine, the intent was for the world to see. And this, unfortunately, I think, is going to become the new normal for the decades to come until things do destabilize enough for us to get into a real fight.
Yeah, I know. But again, I don't, real fights against, like that comment we were talking about last time you were on about, we'll be at war with China within 15 years.
I don't buy it.
Yeah, I need to do
it. I had the same argument in the writer's room yesterday with some of the other guys I work with that are concerned that the table's being set for World War III. I just don't think so. That, you know, the world is too interdependent on one another for us to allow World War III to happen. It's the same argument I have when people say that we're bound for another American Revolution. because we're so politically divided. The reason why that's not true is because of how comfortable we all are. You're never going to revolt. You're not going to lead a revolution when you've got Netflix and your heat is on and the internet's got 100 megabyte per second download speed. And when you call 911, the police are going to come. And you're not going to start a revolution because you're mad about Twitter. No matter how mad you get. Now, some individual people might get crazy and do something stupid, but we're not going to see a civil war in the United States over politics as long as everyone's still comfortable.
I had a guy call me once, and he said, "You know, Mac, you're part of the militia. Everybody's part of the militia." I said, "I'm not." He said, "No, no, you are." And I said, "No, I'm not. I resigned my enlistment in the militia because I know when the Canadians attack across the northern border and we get the militia online, like just north of Fargo, and we're going to defend, okay, everybody's going to be fired up. They're all going to have all their asshole gear on. And then the sun's going to go down and it's going to get cold. And then we're going to look around and we're going to say, like, hey, where'd everybody go? And they left. Like, that's the militia. I'm not a part of that. That's not, you know, that's not
even
me.
When I was still on active duty, you know, I was an MMA guy, right? So right. After I PCS'd to 25th Marines out in Massachusetts, I hadn't found a gym yet. So I said to all the guys that I worked with, you know, there's 30 of us out at I&I. And I was like, hey guys, every day at lunch, I'm going to be in the mat room. We had a mat room right there at the regiment. I'm going to be in the mat room training. You know, if anybody, you know, wants to get hours in towards their McMap belts, if anybody wants to just come learn some stuff, wants to roll, you know, it's a great workout, I'll be there. Every one of the guys, all 30, said 100% they'd be there every day at lunch. When lunch came the next day, two guys showed up. When lunch came the day after, no guys showed up. You know, even U.S. Marines on active duty, if it's a recreational hardship,
yes,
they're going to say no.
Yeah, of
if
course.
You don't need to hurt, you don't want to hurt.
But socially,
and as long as people
but
aren't hurting, hey, they're not going to volunteer to hurt.
But socially, we're going to say yes. Hey, man, that's awesome.
Exactly.
I'll be there. No problem, man. No problem, A-Dog. I mean, I'll be there with you. This sounds like a great. Hey, where's that dude, man? I've never seen him. Okay, before I let you go, we're not doing enough of the topics that you sent me.
Oh man, I just send those to you just as a, you know, whatever.
Okay. Just in case we don't have anything to talk about.
Yeah, right. A little insider baseball for everyone who's heard me ramble for an hour straight every time Mike lets me come on here. I send like an email the day prior every time with like, hey man, here's some stories that did well this past week. Here's what I'm working on this coming week. And I don't think we've ever touched any of them. But every week I send one.
We touched at least. Maybe I feel obligated to touch one or two of them when you send it to me. And let me just tell you, he doesn't send like two or three links either. He sends about 6 to 10 links every time, and he's got a little blurb with each one, and which I really respect. Alex prepares, and I feel bad sometimes when we don't ever get to it. But the other pressing issue that involves the American military, and we've watched it all through Thanksgiving weekend, is what's going on down on the border. Give me your thoughts on that.
This is another one of those things where I really think the media on both sides of the fence here have made this issue into something independent from what it was to begin with. First of all, the United States absolutely needs to and should be able to deploy troops to its own border anytime it sees fit. The United States is participating in, what is it, 7 ongoing conflicts around the world. We've got troops in 150 countries. We've got people on South Korea's border. We've got people in Africa operating. And the United States is losing its mind about us using that exact same strategy, that exact same foreign policy in our own country. To me, it's a really good indicator of how detached people are from our service members that are currently out there right now in the fight in countries that people a lot of times don't even know about. You know, when the Green Berets were killed in Africa,
right,
in Niger, everyone said, we've got Green Berets in Africa. Is there a secret war in Africa? The headlines all said secret war. I deployed to Africa in 2010. We've had troops in Africa for decades. You know, Africa is, in all honesty, where things are really going to jump off in this next century because of all the money that's flowing into the continent. We need a presence in Africa. Americans just aren't interested. Americans don't care about what's going on in Afghanistan. But then when we do it close enough for them to see, then Americans get mad. Those troops at the Mexican border, we're mad that they're not home for Thanksgiving. We're not worried about all the rest of them that are actually in firefights. You know, we lost a Ranger this week. But what we're really worried about is these 5,000 National Guard guys not being home for Thanksgiving.
No, what we're worried about is modifications to Posse Comitatus and, you know, and the fact that, in fact, I just heard Secretary Mattis's little blurb. Look, if our detention is like 60 seconds after we pull somebody who rushes the border off a Border Patrol agent to hand him to a cop, we haven't fundamentally changed the equation. We are in overwatch. We're there to support. Nothing I've seen fundamentally changes the equation, and those kind of deeds by active duty military personnel on the border, if it came to that, would be what you're talking about. But it does not slow down the hysteria.
Exactly. You know, here's a perfect example. There's a military-oriented publication out there. It's a pretty big website. I'm not going to name them because I think that's kind of petty, but I don't have a lot of respect for the work that they do. And they were a part of the press corps that were asking those questions that prompted that Mattis quote. And at the end, they brought up that in the 90s, you know, we deployed troops to the Mexican border in the 90s in a very similar way, I think under Clinton.
Right.
One migrant was shot by a U.S. Marine who thought he was engaging, you know. It was a big issue. Everybody was very upset, and rightfully so. And here we are a couple decades later, and they said to Mattis, this one publication, well, how do you know that they're not going to shoot Mexicans now? And Mattis was like, they don't even have guns. I'm not going to dignify that with a response, and walked away, which is probably my favorite thing that James Mattis has done in a long time. You know, the media really wants there to be a firing line of Marines at the Mexican border because it's a very good way for hardcore conservatives to get riled up about how awesome America is and look at how badass we are. And it's a great way for hardcore liberals to get all riled up about how heartless we are and what monsters we really are.
And if we could do it in that, if we could do it in that format, it would be so easy to present it and so easy to deliver to, right? Right?
So much easier to package for mass consumption, right?
Exactly.
And instead what we're getting is, in all honesty, I think it was a bit of a political stunt to send the troops there. The troops, first and foremost, people keep losing sight of this. The troops are individual American people who chose to serve their country. Every one of them told to follow lawful orders and not to abide unlawful orders. We're not talking about 5,000 robots. We're not talking about 5,000 serial killers. These are National Guard soldiers. We're talking about the guys you work with at Circuit City. They're not cold-blooded killers heading out there to scope in on Mexicans. You know, we're talking about Americans at the American border. I think that it was an unnecessary political stunt to put them there. I think that nobody's going to get killed by American soldiers unless they do something incredibly stupid, in which case they would have been killed by Border Patrol anyway.
Right.
You know, and we're letting ourselves, once again, worry more about this political argument than the real issues we've got. You know, there's a lot more troops than 5,000 away from their families this holiday season, in a lot more danger, and in all honesty, in places that are worthy of debate.
Well, again, it's
a great place for us to discuss what we're doing.
I think that
the Mexican border.
I think that when you look at the border, the great head scratcher is, and again, I'm with you. I thought it was a political stunt, but when you have the Secretary of Defense come on, who doesn't do stunts and say the DOD doesn't do stunts, this was a legitimate request. And now you're watching this and you're saying, you know, he was right. I mean, it happened during the election because of timing. Maybe Trump took advantage of it. But I think that, you know, when you watch the events of yesterday, you heard the stories about, well, they're going to storm the border, blah, 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 blah. And I thought it was cool that they couldn't get across. And I hope that the Mexican...
I agree with that. I think that we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that on the Mexican side of the border, they're not insulated from American media.
Oh, no, I agree with you. But I will tell you, I mean, the Mexicans, to me, when it begins to affect commercial activity at the port of entry of Tijuana or any of the major ports of entry, the Mexicans don't play that game. They know how to count their money. And you will see that problem.
Yeah, for sure.
You will see that problem dealt with very quickly, and it'll go away very quickly because the Mexicans don't play that game. All right. And they don't have to. They don't worry about some of the things we worry about. All right. I know that you've got a phone with limited cell life. I don't want to take too much of it up. First of all, good luck with the generator. Hopefully the tree's out of the way and you can head to your brother's. And thanks for the visit this morning.
Hey, man, I'm always glad to come on. Thanks a lot for having me.
And congratulations on the new editorship, man. I think it's awesome, man. And you're already getting rave reviews. Well done.
You know, and traffic is really picking up on the site, you know, so it seems like people are responding to my work. And that's the only thing you could ever ask for as a writer. You know, that's the coolest feeling in the world.
Wait.
If you guys haven't checked out I'm sorry?
As an editor, man. What do you mean as a writer?
As an editor. Oh, man. As an editor. That's going to take a little while to get used to, you know?
Nice.
But, you know, go to fightersleep.com and check it out. You know, I implore you. You can also find me on alexhollings.com or facebook.com/alexhollingswriter. On Twitter at AlexHotline52. Just go to fightersweep.com. You know, you'll find all my stuff there. And, you know, I could use the traffic. Every little bit counts.
There you go. All right. Have a good one, man. Good luck with the tree and good luck with the generator.
Hey, thanks a lot, brother.
All right. There you have it. The one and only Alex Holland. How about that? Yeah, pretty impressive. All right, we'll take a break. Gunner set to join us next on a Monday. More of Allman Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute, heard every Wednesday right here on Allmarine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on Allmarine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Readboard page at allmarineradio.com.